Well, hello, friends. Mark DeMatteo coming at you with a brand new message going out to my Great Questions group on this 24th day of June 2015. And today I'm bringing to you message number 43. Title is Considering Space Part 8, which is going to be the last in our series on space. Subtitle is Contemplating Confinement, Considering the Condition of Being Inner Space Bound Part 4. And we are continuing to explore our desire for physical contact. And as I said, we're going to be wrapping up our little mini series on space. And as we get started here, let me just say a quick welcome to those of you that have joined us since our last message broadcast. We continue to grow our population of listeners. So that's exciting. And I want to remind all of you, especially if you are new, that all of my previous audios are posted on my website, which is markdematteo.com, and that's markdematteo.com. This is a chronological series, so it will show you or share with you how we have arrived at the point that we are in these messages. Okay, so, well, all right. If you all are ready, I am. So here we go. Let's get rolling. And folks, in our in this most recent portion of our mini-series on being inner space-bound, we have been considering this innate desire we have for physical contact. In general, we all love to touch, to connect, and we have been discussing this progression in regard to things, animals, children, and now people. In our previous message, we covered loving on kids and holding hands, right? And now we're going to briefly take a look at an embrace and then a kiss. So let's start off with the embrace. Friends, there's no doubt that another interesting aspect of this progressive need we have for touch is this desire we have to put our arms around someone else and to hold them close to us. Moreover, to actually hold them right up against us. I have already mentioned the warm little hug that many of us may occasionally love to share with people we feel a degree of closeness with. Well, as in the case of holding hands, here too, the better we get to know someone and the more fond of them we become, the more we may sometimes feel the urge to give them more than just a brief little hug. Instead, we may actually feel the need to hold on to them for a bit to give them a bigger, more significant embrace. Bigger hugs and embraces can come in a variety of shapes and sizes and degrees of intensity and duration. However, I think it is safe to say that normally, the closer we are to someone emotionally, the closer we usually want to be to them physically as well. And while the degree and extent of this desire can vary quite a bit, depending on the type and circumstances of the relationship, in general, the closer the relationship, the greater the desire for bigger hugs, right? This is certainly often the case between people that we are particularly good friends with. There are many times when we can feel the desire or the urge to give a close friend an embrace, which is beyond just a brief little hug. It may be to welcome them after a long-term absence or to say farewell before one. It could be to celebrate a special time of joy or perhaps to comfort them in a particular time of need or sorrow or loss. Or it could be just a spontaneous but slightly more significant gesture of affection. In fact, as I was preparing to write this portion, just out of curiosity, I looked up the word embrace, and the first definition that popped up was holding someone closely in our arms, especially as a sign of affection, to which I would add, and that also fosters affection. For regardless of the reason or circumstance, putting our arms around a special friend for a few moments can create a unique sense of comfort, closeness, and connection with them that is not only heartwarming, but can help cultivate an even stronger bond between them and us. Now, furthermore, when the level of the relationship moves up and on to that of a romantic attraction, as in the case of holding the person's hand, the desire for and the effect of an embrace takes on an entirely new elevated complexion. At this point, our desire to be close to a person can often become quite dramatic. The emotional pull we experience is sometimes amazingly intense, and we can frequently find ourselves being virtually swept away by our yearning. Moreover, actually holding that person close to us is now far more than merely a heartwarming pleasure. For while it may indeed still be heartwarming, and no doubt a pleasure, it is now also often a highly charged emotional delight, right? With our good friend, our embrace might have been more of an arms and upper body hug, but not always. But now, however, we probably would prefer to pull as much as the other person as close to us as possible. For as in the touch of someone else's hand, here too there is also much unspoken communication that can be conveyed via an embrace, as well as a tremendous amount of interconnection with the other person. And I think we'd all agree that holding someone we care deeply about closely up against us, feeling our arms around them and theirs around us, is a wonderful experience that can bring an extraordinary amount of joy and satisfaction to our heart. So, there is no doubt about it that on a variety of different levels, an embrace is another special form of touch we human beings generally have an inbred desire, and we could actually say need for. But now, let's move on to another somewhat remarkable form of touch, which most of us also find ourselves having an innate desire for, the kiss. I'm sure we all know what a kiss is, right? It is pressing our lips up against something or someone else, including their lips. Perhaps you, like me, have sometimes wondered why we even have this seemingly unusual impulse. In fact, isn't it a little odd when you stop and think about it? Why should we really want to press our lips up against anything, let alone someone else's lips? I have always thought this urge was quite extraordinary when I paused and reflected on it. However, having said that, and any perceived peculiarness and all that aside, there is no doubt that a kiss is an amazingly pleasurable form of touch. In fact, in some ways, it might indeed be one of the most personal and intimate we are capable of experiencing. For much like our hands, our lips are both incredibly sensitive and also remarkably expressive. As in the other forms of touch we have already discussed, kisses too come in a wide variety of shapes and sizes and levels or degrees of intent and intensity. For on one end of the spectrum, in similar fashion to holding hands and hugs, a little kiss, especially on the cheek, can be a simple yet special sign of affection between folks that are close friends or family. And in regard to family, I have known of some friends that would even kiss some of their other family members on the lips too sometimes. Personally, my family never did that growing up. As much as we've been huggers, we haven't been much on kissing. Maybe every once in a while on the cheek, but that's about it. However, regardless of how much kissing we do or don't do between us and friends and family, on the other end of the spectrum, as we move on once again up to a romantic attraction, here again, the entire context of our desire, as it does with the other forms of touch we've already discussed, tends to amplify significantly. Now the impulse, the yearning, the longing to kiss the person we are attracted to can become keenly, and we might even say extremely, pronounced. In fact, sometimes almost overwhelmingly so. And while we may still want to kiss them on the cheek, now our desire spreads and we might find ourselves also thinking about kissing them on other spots as well, say their hand or their neck, for instance. However, at this point, in the main, our interest is now primarily focused on their mouth. For we normally suddenly find ourselves with this almost uncontrollable desire to kiss them on their lips, and likewise to have them kissing us back at the same time. And as wonderful as holding someone's hand can be, and as marvelous as holding them tightly in an embrace is, kissing someone on this level can be an extraordinarily enjoyable experience that brings a profound level of connection between two people on an even greater level, perhaps, than any of the other forms of touch we have already discussed. Now, there is certainly much more that could be said about all these types of contact and this intriguing desire we have for physical touch on the whole. And in fact, we are going to return to this topic later and discuss it in even more detail. For as I have previously mentioned, I felt this overall need we have for closeness and intimacy, and our ability to experience a fairly significant amount of it, held some very significant cause and effect implications to my pursuit of finding accurate answers to the great questions. And indeed, I had no idea just how correct this assumption was and to what astonishing truths it would eventually lead me to, which I will be telling you all about down the road. At this point, however, let me share with you some conclusions I came to regarding this universal longing for physical connection we have in regard to our state of being inner space bound. To begin with, they no doubt parallel the limitations we have to developing mental connections. As marvelous as our capabilities are for allowing us to create a level of physical connection through the various forms of touch we have discussed, on the whole, they are likewise fundamentally limited. For as pleasurable and satisfying as they all can certainly be, there is yet still a point beyond which we cannot go. Most of us will many times crave a greater degree of closeness and connection than we are actually able to experience, and consequently, we can frequently feel an underlying sense of pervading inadequacy and are quite often left unfulfilled and yearning for something more, right? See, here again, we are faced with the clear reality of being confined within the realm of our physical bodies and the constraint of essentially not being able to get out nor being able to let anyone else in. It is almost as if an analogy might be made to each of us actually living within our own private enclosed circle. We might wish we could let someone living within another circle somehow come into ours, but the reality is, beyond certain minimal levels, we simply cannot. We might be able to tell them something of what's going on inside ours, and they might be able to do the same. And maybe we can bump the circles close together to a modest degree in a variety of different ways for brief periods of time, but that's about it. Bottom line, we are trapped within our own circle and everybody else is trapped within theirs. And therefore, we are faced with, once again, the dilemma of being inner space bound. We have a longing for a greater level of connection than we are capable of actually experiencing, not only mentally, but also physically as well. Now, as we begin to wrap up this 8-part discussion on space, let me review with you some of the key points my studies of this second fundamental component of the cosmos led me to. For as in the case of my examination of the matter component, considering space in light of the 5 laws of my X-frame, provided conclusions that were not only fascinating and compelling, but also gratifying to me personally. To begin with, space is essentially an exceedingly vast three-dimensional construct in which everything within our universe exists. It is also an exceedingly vast effect which must have an adequate cause to account for its existence. And that adequate cause must both precede and be greater than the effect which it produces. So we are obviously talking about one extremely large cause. Furthermore, the law of conservation states that space could not have created itself. And additionally, the law of decay states that once formed, the very fabric of space would decay if it were not somehow being constantly and continuously sustained. And even though the actual components are beyond our complete understanding, in order to rationally account for the construct and continued existence of space, the four P factors must be present and properly applied, right? You all remember this if you've been following along, been a part of the group. Otherwise, you can review, see what we mean by all these things, okay? In other words, there must be some form of adequate power, a process, parts, and plans, all from a source outside of the present cosmos, and all properly orchestrated and integrated for the manufacture and maintenance of space. And as the law of information dictates, plans ultimately only originate in a mind, and a mind capable of creative thought always belongs to a person, a someone. And as in the case of matter, a someone with the capability necessary for the coordinated application of those four P factors to produce and sustain the virtually limitless amount of space now present in the known cosmos can once again be logically and rationally called God. And since both the mass and space components each require such an incalculably great cause to account for them, and there appears to be an integration and harmony in the way they operate together, it seems both reasonable and adequate to conclude that they are both the effects of the same cause. In other words, this same someone was, in all likelihood, responsible for the construction and maintenance of both. Thus, my study of space had produced even more simple and forthright evidence pointing towards the existence of God. Now, furthermore, my growing understanding of the true nature of our cosmos was also beginning to paint a picture of what this someone might really be like. This was of particular interest to me, for personally, I have always been intrigued by the concept of a high God, a self-existent supreme being, one who is infinite, eternal, all-knowing, all-powerful, and exists everywhere at the same time. In fact, any of you that were taught about the concept of God growing up probably were taught characteristics or attributes like this, okay? It's probably common. And yet, while probably all of us were taught of a notion of a high God like this, and perhaps can conceive of the idea of a high God like this, I would yet venture that many of us, myself included, might often find it difficult to understand exactly how a being of this magnitude and with those attributes could actually exist. Yet, it was indeed exciting and compelling for me, and hopefully now as I'm sharing this with you, for you all too, to see clear evidence from the actual structure and operation of these first two fundamental cosmic components, that of matter and space, which pointed to a cause which indeed must possess most of these same attributes. And we're going to elaborate on that more as we get further down the road. But the actual construct of the cosmos was pointing to a being that must indeed have those attributes, folks. And if, again, I've already elaborated on those as we've gone through these particular components, the X frame and the implications that the actual existence of these components required empirically to account for their existence. Okay, now let's move on as I wrap this message up. Additionally, my study of space confronted me with the reality of yet another fascinating but frustrating paradox, right? That of being space-bound on the three overall levels we've discussed in our most recent messages. For in multiple ways, we'd like to be able to get out and move around, explore, and interact. And yet beyond a very limited degree, we simply cannot, for we are trapped within bodies that are very confined. We are space-bound. And yet we still have this innate and sometimes powerful desire to be able to reach out beyond these bounds that we are presently limited to in each of these three areas. As I have already indicated, all of these conditions presented me with additional cause and effect realities that were intriguing, and I will be sharing them with you all shortly. However, before I do, I want to move on now to the third and final fundamental cosmic component, which is time, and explore it with you. For of the three building blocks, time is perhaps the most fascinating, extraordinary, and elusive. Yet I will relate to you what became quite apparent to me regarding its construct, operation, and probable origin as I once again use the power of my five X-frame laws to take a simple but accurate look at the true nature of this last core component of the cosmos. And that is what we're going to begin to do next time. So until then, gang, this is Marcus D signing off and wishing you all another wonder-filled day, and look forward to talking to you then. Okay, so have a great day, and we'll be in touch. Bye-bye now.